is a touchdown for the 49ers!
Smith in a gun with Gore on his left hip. Third down, Alex takes the snap. Alex looking.
Got it.
Post, and it's got him! Caught! Touchdown, 49ers!
In 1981, Bill Walsh established a football dynasty that lasted for 20 years. The franchise lost its way for a time until a new coach brought back a winning culture.
San Francisco, he shouted, Harbaugh! Harbaugh! Harbaugh is a coach for our return!
What's your deal?
Jim Harbaugh has made the 49ers a contender again. Covering it all is the 49ers Fancast.
Greetings once again, 49ers fans. Welcome to the 49ers Fancast. I am your indomitable host, Indiana Jim. He is the abominable Sean Farrell. How's it going, Sean?
Well, I can only hear out of one ear now that you just blew my eardrum out. But besides that, rock on.
That's right. Well, I hope those new iPhone 5 earbuds just blew out a bunch of ears because I'm super excited about another Victory Tuesday, huh? How about that?
I'm a little underwhelmed, but pleased. We'll get into it, I'm sure.
How do you get underwhelmed about 34-0? Is it just because it wasn't 57-0?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, that makes perfect logical sense. Okay, so this is the 49ers Fancast, and I don't know how many people are still listening to this show, but anyway, if you want to get in touch, like Mark from Maui, who seems to be the only person who calls in voicemails now that Sean has to be the co-host, that phone number is 3477-GO-NINERS. That's 3477-GO, the number 9-ERS. Email 49ersFancast@gmail.com. On Twitter, we are at 49ersFancast, and you can always leave a comment on the blog post at 49ersFancast.com. So, speaking of voicemails and Mark from Maui, here is the voicemail from Mark from Maui. Wow, that was like the worst voicemail intro ever, but here it is anyway.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Sean. It's Mark in Maui. Some hopefully quick notes for you. I actually have quite a list today. I was impressed with what Justin Smith was doing in the Jet game. Overall, the Jet game was fabulous, and I was a little miffed that the network cut the feed. But let's see, some other things. Gore and Hunter, it was great the job the offensive line did getting them holes, and both the Gore and Hunter ripping right through those for 6-plus yards per carry. I was impressed that there were 9 players that actually helped with the ground game. So the coaching staff did a great job spreading the ball around. Kaepernick to Moss was a nice long bomb throw. In fact, I liked what the Niners were doing with Kaep during the entire game. But that long pass to Moss was really nice. Even though it was into triple coverage, Moss did a fabulous job actually playing a little bit of defense, preventing the interception. Justin Smith, awesome job. One quick note regarding Justin Smith in the Viking game, though. His blocking assignment, he was actually on the sideline when Ponder had that run through the defensive line. And if Justin Smith was on the field during that play, then he probably would have blocked Ponder from making that run. Let's see. Don't believe we have a quarterback controversy at this point, but Kaepernick might be in the rearview mirror of Alex. Let's see. Offensive line, defense, special teams all did a great job showing up. Let's see. There was a interview I heard from Mike Sherman, former receiver of the Niners. He was saying that Cap was doing a very good job. He has a great gun for an arm, but he needs to take some of the needs to develop a touch and take some of the heat off of his passes. That's what he was observing when he was looking at the workout and drill. Let's see. Kaepernick's real weakness is a slow release. Apparently he has a long windup, and the defenses really love that, so they can pick him while the route is being run. Kaepernick's big pros would be a dual threat of the run and pass, which I'm sure you're already aware of. Whitner, Golson, Rogers all played really, really well. You saw some more ball hawking this time. Time of possession under Harbaugh is something else I picked up this week. Apparently, under Harbaugh, they have 11-1 when they're winning the time of possession battle, and they're 5-3 when they aren't winning that time of possession. But the recognition, the entire D, as I mentioned earlier, Andy Lee really stood out. He's back to form from last season. He had some spectacular punts that placed the Jets very deep in their side of the field. There's one, I believe, it was on the 2, and there was another one that was within the 5-yard line. Special teams and offensive line also did an excellent job. Looking ahead, I don't believe the Bills should be a problem for us. I believe Harbaugh is going to keep everything focused, business-like. But I don't think we should overlook anything at this point forward. I hope the Niners learned a really strong lesson with the Vikings, and maybe the Vikings are a team that we may have to reckon with in the playoffs. Let's see. Niners have a new workout facility. Don't know if you heard about that. When they got back from the East Coast, they were greeted with a nice little surprise, and the players have already started working out and taking advantage of some of the new options that this facility has, which the other one didn't. Let's see. After the Bills, Niners, looks like we're probably going to be entering into the tougher part, if not the toughest part of the schedule. We've got Giants, Hawks, Arizona at Arizona, Rams, Bears, and at the Saints. We are a little bit nicked up in a few places. So Bulaga in Andy Lee's hands. Willis, Vernon Davis. I was a little surprised that Davis got hurt in the last game. But those seem to be the notable injuries for next few games. Look forward to your next podcast, which I believe you're going to be recording today. And go Niners. Bye.
Aloha, Mark. Thank you very much again for calling. And what do we got here? Sean, why don't you take point on this?
Well, I think the best thing about this voicemail is that I was acknowledged right in the beginning, Jim and Sean. So now I really feel like I am a true part of the show.
That's right.
So,
you are a part of this.
So we don't need to talk about any of the rest of it. That's all that really mattered. No.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Obviously, lots of good stuff in there. Mark talked about the running attack and just how productive it was with the 9 different players carrying the ball. And really,
right.
Before we started recording, Jim, I didn't have much time between recording and getting home from work, but I did squeeze in a little bit of game film in there and watched all the 49ers possessions in the first half, and they really did not throw the ball very many times. It was run, 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 and lots of run.
Oh, yeah.
Which the stats point to, since they chewed up 255 yards on the ground, I think. So that was great. But, Mark, I'm going to have to cool you down about Kaepernick pushing Alex a little bit maybe for the starting job. we'll get into some of we'll get into Alex's performance later on, but I don't think he's anywhere close to pushing Alex for the starting job.
There are two things. One, the Jets have probably the most horrid rushing defense in the NFL, and you know the keys to winning on the road are run the ball and stop the run. Two things: one, the Niners are great at, and one, the Jets are terrible at. Mm-hmm. So I knew going into this that they were going to run the heck out of the ball. And honestly, I wasn't expecting Alex to put up a lot of numbers. Now, I figured maybe he'd get a touchdown in the red zone or something. But, and we can talk certainly about red zone shots to the end zone, which I know you're itching to get to. But, you know, I expected huge rushing numbers, and that's exactly what we got. Because I knew that with this bad rushing defense, it was going to be you run the ball, you eat the clock, you only throw it when you have to. Mm-hmm. And that's what they did. They did not stress the passing game at all. That's one reason why I'm not too worried about the passing game going forward. But the second thing, and this is remarkable, that any 49er fans are saying, oh, look, Kaepernick's going to get Alex out of a job. Wait a minute. How many passes did he throw? One?
Yeah.
Into how much coverage? Triple?
Well, now the thing with that pass, it was way late. I mean, he needed to throw that pass 2 seconds sooner because Randy Moss was chewing up so much field. He had those guys beat. If Kaepernick throws that ball 2 seconds sooner and throws it a little bit farther, then Moss is catching that by himself. Well, you know, basically by himself
behind
in the end
three
zone.
Guys, right. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not going to quibble with Kaepernick doing that. You know, it was one of those things where, you know, are you going to get the Jets cheating up thinking Kaepernick's going to run? You fake play action, you throw the ball, and, you know, and I knew what they were doing. They were taking a shot. And it's even the thing that the commentators mentioned, you know, it's like with the threat of Kaepernick to run, you're not sure whether he's going to throw it or run it or not. You know, right. You don't know what he's doing. And, there's some people probably saying like, oh, see, they put him in because Alex can't make that throw. As we've seen from some overthrows, I think Alex can make that throw. The point is the deception. But anyway, you know, Kaepernick was in there. He ran the ball 5 times for 50 yards. Could have had 2 touchdowns. Yeah, but, you know, doing that doesn't mean he's pushing Alex for playing time as the starting quarterback.
Yeah, and Mark was really just obviously kind of hinting that could be starting to happen. But I think more of it was a change of pace kind of a thing. And really, I think it was a great game for them to do something like that because they weren't afraid of the Jets at all. If you watched the game, you could tell that they were kind of experimenting a little bit with this and giving every other team they're going to play new film to watch and worry about. So now, I mean, it was just another little wrinkle teams have to consider now. And it was done very effectively. And Kaepernick is so fast. I mean, he looks like his legs are so long, it's almost freakish when he's running full speed. Yeah. It's like he's taking 5 yards at a time.
He's like a gazelle.
But you know, Mark also mentioned how great the defense played. But again, a little perspective. Yes, the 49ers defense is great. But man, that offense is terrible. Really terrible. I don't know if it's the worst offense in the league, but it's certainly a bottom five.
Oh, the Jets?
Yeah, the Jets. And Sanchez had receivers open and that he just flat out couldn't hit. I mean, couldn't even get close. So defense gets credit. They showed up and did their thing. But if they had been playing against a competent quarterback, it would have at least been a competitive game. As it was, it's still only 10-0 at halftime.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I kind of feel bad for Sanchez, honestly, because you know, Rex is one of these guys. He's like Singletary pretty much. Or, you know, you might just say he's like his dad. He's like Buddy Ryan. He may seem a little more gregarious, but really when it comes to quarterbacks, he has no idea what he's doing. And it's kind of like Singletary, like I said. And so, you know, they only have one really decent receiver in Santonio Holmes. He's getting up there in years. But, you know, and now, unfortunately for him, he hurt his foot, and who knows how long he's going to be out. But you know, one decent wide receiver, an offensive line that can't hold their blocks. They can't generate very much push in the run game at all. And their defense is just getting manhandled all day long. And if you don't have a physically dominant quarterback like, say, a Roethlisberger or a Tom Brady or, you know, like a Dan Marino, somebody who can, you know, gets the ball out quick, you know, get some speedy receivers, get some good, you know, routes out there. Because, I mean, I don't know what kind of offense, you know, scheme that Sparano is running. So what Sanchez needs is what Alex Smith has, and he doesn't. But, yeah, a lot of times Sanchez, I mean, he almost throws the ball as bad as Tebow. You know, it's not pretty to watch sometimes. So, you know, it's kind of like some of it's Sanchez, but some of it's really just honestly the whole team. So,
yeah, well, at least Tebow's capable of breaking outside of the pocket and making something happen with his legs. You know, Sanchez isn't even a threat for that. But you're right. He doesn't really have anything to work with, and I'm not I don't know. I was never a huge Sanchez fan to begin with. No matter how much Colin Cowherd likes the guy, I don't know if he still does, but he used to sing his praises all the time last year and the year before. So,
but this is not the Jets fan cast. This is the 49ers fan cast.
So that's about it. Thanks for calling, Mark. And I do want to apologize to Mark and fans around the country who had the game cut off by Fox.
Oh my God!
Thankfully, I'm in NorCal, so I got to see the glorious end with Kaepernick sliding at the 1 yard line. To I don't know if that saved face or if that just humiliated the Jets even more.
Right. I know. Well, and he said, you know, he said he didn't want to. Right, you know, you don't want to rub, I can't talk.
Rub their nose.
Run
in
up
it.
The score, yeah. But also, you know, you don't want to make your defense go back out there again. You know, risking the possibility of injury or whatever. You end it.
Can you
stop there? Run out the clock.
Can you say Josh Morgan?
End it. I don't know. Can you?
You know, the Tampa Bay game
Josh
last year.
Josh Morgan.
Oh man. This is gonna be a long show, folks.
Oh, you mean when he broke his ankle or whatever?
Yeah, when they were up 35-0 or whatever it was, and they were still playing, and maybe that would have been a good time to
went
just,
for it on fourth and three, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so I guess that does it for the voicemail.
That's it.
Okay, so
call again, Mark. Awesome.
Please, yes, please do. So the Niners D had a dominating performance against the New York Jets. The D came to play, they made things happen, and they looked like the defense that got 28 takeaways last year. Mm-hmm. That was great to see. It was great to see them being on the road, taking a team that you're supposed to beat, and thoroughly throttling the heck out of them.
Yep.
And without Sopoaga, they didn't miss him, which is good. Kind of, you know, gives him a chance to maybe come back for home against the Bills, or at least if he doesn't play against the Bills, possibly coming back against the Giants the week after that. So that's good. I mean, there's not really much you can say about the defense. I do have to say though. And I've been real hard on Deshaun Goldson in the past. Everybody knows that I'm not the biggest fan of the tuna head, but I've been coming around because this season he looks like he's learned how to wrap and tackle when he hits a guy. He doesn't just lower his shoulder and expect the guy to fall down. That one hit, the hit that he put on the tight end, that was a wicked, wicked little hit, and it popped the ball out, and
that was brutal.
They called it a fumble.
Yeah.
That was brutal. And then, you know, I've never been a fan of his coverage skills, but I mean, by all rights, Santonio Holmes should have had him beat for that touchdown.
Yeah.
And for him to follow trailing behind and make that jump and tip that ball away, I was like, if he keeps making plays like that, I'm all for giving him a good, you know, a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, and hopefully he keeps up that kind of play. But we haven't really seen that from him. It seems like he's really, you know, he's kind of been an off and on guy. You know, good year, bad year, good year, bad year. And this time he's following up, looks like, with two good years in a row so far. So,
yeah, so far so good. He's really stepping up and playing better than he played last year.
Yeah, he's kind of playing like a Pro Bowl free safety right now. But I got to say, When you talk about that hit, you know, the league has been real big on stopping guys from hitting receivers up high, you know, hitting them in the head, hitting them when they're in the air and defenseless. So you're going to end up with things like what Goldson did to this guy. Now, luckily, he's okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I can see, you know, if you have a knee injury, you can still walk and talk and use your brain.
Right.
But the NFL's asking for guys to have their knees blown out.
Right.
That's just the logical progression from here, and I don't know that I like that.
And obviously Goldson wasn't trying to take the guy's knee out, but he has to hit him low. You know, even if you hit in the chest area, how many times have we seen players get hit in the chest or the shoulder and they're called for helmet to helmet when they don't even touch them in the helmet? Right. I know it's hard and the game's moving very quickly, but Goldson did what he had to do to avoid a penalty and yet really put a lick on a guy and separate him from the ball. So and I have to, of all the teams in the NFL, it seems like the 49ers might be the best at destroying people within the rules. You know, defensively. I mean, Whitner and Goldson in particular, the number of flags they have thrown on them is such a small percentage of the hits they put on people compared to other games that I watch, it seems. It's anecdotal. I don't have any numbers to back it up, but
right. And then, you know, then and like the one that he put on against the Saints, whoever that guy, you know, Pierre something.
Pierre Thomas.
I forget. Yeah, Pierre Thomas. You know, it's kind of like they don't call helmet to helmet if it's a running back, but they do on quarterbacks and receivers. I don't.
Well, it's because he wasn't defenseless in that situation. So even though there was some helmet to helmet contact, if they're not if they're not defenseless and they're running down the field in a football play, then you can get away with it. As long as you're not headhunting, as long as you don't launch at their head.
Right. The defense got a few sacks, though against the Jets, I wouldn't say that's incredibly impressive, per se. Alden Smith was his regular beast mode self. And then Carlos Rogers with the amazing weird injury fumble return thing. That was a little odd. So
very bizarre play.
Defense, we can probably just say, you know, A++ effort for those guys. Special teams. Andy Lee really took advantage of that MetLife Stadium turf. He really knew how to get that ball to stop down there at the 3-yard line. You know, that was just amazing watching him just hit those and have them just pop straight up in the air.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that's just the type of turf that MetLife has or what, but you know, that guy takes punting seriously. Because did you see him when he shanked that one like to the 50?
Oh yeah, he was pretty pissed.
he was angry with himself, and he's, you know, punting is a serious deal to that guy. So
I like to call him the Middle Earth punter, because without his helmet on, he looks like a hobbit. When he's got that uniform on, he's got this little head sticking out. He just like, he's from the Shire.
Right. And he's got buck teeth. No.
Yeah, Mark, obviously, he talked about the game Lee had and just special teams in general, except for David Akers, who had a rare off game.
Yeah, it was kind of, they were talking about how he just kept hitting stuff to the right of the crossbar. And and obviously he did it in the game, so I don't know what the deal was with his leg, but he did hit two though that went in. So
did he hit two? I thought he was 1 for 3. He had the one at the end of the first half.
Yeah.
I
don't know. I thought he hit.
He must have hit two. Look at the score. He must have hit two. Yeah. Okay. But he missed two also, right?
Right.
Yeah, all right. Which is odd. So the score really should have been 40-0.
Right.
Minimum.
Well, possibly more.
Uh-huh.
Well, it should have been 47-0 if Kaepernick had gone into the end zone.
Right. And then if Alex hadn't missed Manningham and Crabtree, we're talking... wait a minute. Are we talking about that yet?
Well... You know, we talked about defense and we talked about special teams. Sean, do you have anything you'd like to share about the offense?
Okay, so Jim saw me screaming at Twitter during the game, which takes a long time to do on a Nook. I'm not very fast doing one finger across the Nook. That's why there's a 5-minute delay between tweets. Watching the tape a little bit, watching the game again this afternoon, I have to admit I felt a little better about what I saw. I only watched the first half.
Oh, you mellowed out a little bit?
Yeah, I had a little bit more perspective. You know, the first, when the game is live and you're watching, you're caught up in it, you want every play to be a home run. But that said, the running game was obviously working very well. Alex did make some nice throws, the one to Vernon Davis in the second quarter going down the field, a couple others. But he did just flat out miss a couple as well, which... is a little frustrating. You know, you look at the Vikings game and the whole team played poorly. So it wasn't Alex's best game, but no one had a good game in that.
Right.
This game, the running was working well. There were one or two drops. Delaney dropped one. Crabtree dropped one. But the passing game just wasn't really in full sync. And I'm not sure where all the blame goes. But I do know that the two games combined, Alex missed probably three passes that would have been a touchdown. And I have a two-year-old walking into the room right now. Hi. Hi, honey. Daddy's working. Hi. Come on out. Here, give me a kiss.
This parental interruption has been brought to you by Alex's left arm. Doesn't throw the ball as hard, but still looks good.
Well, even if I block the door, honey, she sits there and does that.
Also brought to you by Patrick Willis. He will punch you in the mouth, and you will die.
So I assume you're going to cut all that out, right?
Yeah, why not?
Sorry about that. Okay, where should I start? I don't know where I was. I don't know how to pick that up.
Let's see. Passing game not in sync. There were a few plays that should have been touchdowns in the last three games or whatever.
Okay, yeah. I'll just pick up there in the last two games. But in the last two games, there were several throws, three that should have been touchdowns. Obviously, the Randy Moss in the end zone would have been a touchdown.
Yeah.
And then the one in this game, Manningham down the sideline in the second half, flat-out miss. And Crabtree in the first half going across the field and just missed him there. And I'm pretty sure that there was no one up the field that would have caught them. They would have run into the end zone. Maybe Crabtree would have been caught based on the safety's mm-hmm. angle, but he would have had a chance anyway mm-hmm. to get into the end zone. So after the mm-hmm. first two games of the season, it really seemed like the passing attack was coming together and already vastly improved to last season. And then I know they're on the road and East Coast, blah, 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 blah. I know all that stuff. But I want to see it be consistent, where the passing game mm-hmm. is working like it should and wide open receivers are getting the ball.
Like the first two games.
Like the first two games, yeah. So we have... We're a quarter of the way through the season, so I'm hoping I'm not overreacting here. I'm not. Obviously, mm-hmm. Alex, it deserves to be the starter. No one else deserves to be the starter of that team. But whatever it is that's preventing him from hitting some of these wide open receivers needs to be fixed. Because when Vernon Davis is wide mm-hmm. open, he never misses.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's psychological or if it's just they're running routes with Vernon that they've been running together for 5 years or something in practice. I don't mm-hmm. know. But what are your thoughts on that? And then we'll get to the half debacle.
When you get guys like Manningham and Randy Moss, there's going to be that adjustment period. But we also have to realize that they've only played one game at home. And they played three games on the road.
That's true.
And, you know, he played great at Green Bay. He completed a lot of passes against Minnesota. They were just short. And then the complaint, of course, was, well, he's only thrown four balls downfield, and so they come out against the Jets, and he throws seven. Seven balls past the 20. Now, I want to go through, real quick, Barrow's list of the seven 20 or more yard throws in the game.
This is Matt Barrow's?
Yes, Matt Barrows. And Mayoko did the same thing. They both kind of... Well, Mayoko did the third down plays. Barrows looked at all the deep throws. So this is on the first play of the game. Smith goes downfield to Crabtree, who is held by Wilson, drawing a pass interference penalty.
Yep.
Okay? If he hadn't been held, that pass was on target.
Yes, it was.
It looked like the timing was good there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Still in the first quarter, first and 20. On their own 26, Smith goes deep downfield to Mario Manningham for 26 yards.
That's a good throw.
So he hit that one.
Mm-hmm.
First quarter, third and 7 at the New York 45, Smith goes deep again for Manningham down the left sideline. The ball is overthrown and incomplete, but Manningham complains that he was held by Wilson. So let's work under the assumption here that they were trying to take advantage of the Jets' corners. And especially Wilson, because, you know, he was coming in replacement of Revis, and they were really testing that secondary.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were a few times that Wilson got away with stuff. You know, and I'm not making excuses. I'm just pointing out the facts. You can watch the plays, and you can see them. You know, they're grabbing, and they're doing what receivers and defensive backs do. The second quarter.
That third throw, the one to Manningham, that was, yeah, there was a little bit of them touching each other. It was fairly mild, though. I mean, to the point where I was like,
sure.
I'm not gonna
quibble on that one and say, oh, he threw it fine. You know,
yeah.
Obviously, it wasn't complete, so... But, you know, whatever. Third and eight, San Francisco 25 in the second quarter. Smith goes deep left to Crabtree, who has two steps on Wilson, and the ball was really badly overthrown.
Mm-hmm. That's
we
the
can
one
admit
I'm talking
that.
About.
You know, he was a couple yards ahead of Crabtree, and Crabtree's like, oh, I can't get there. But it would have been nullified anyway because Anthony Davis had an unnecessary roughness penalty.
Now,
so even if he had completed that one...
That may be true, but I still want to see the ball hit the guy in the hands.
Right, yeah. Well, sure. But I'm just saying, we can't cry over the result of the play because it really wouldn't have helped anyway.
Yeah.
Let's see, third quarter, first and 10, San Francisco 40. Smith goes deep right to Walker, who makes the catch but is well out of bounds. Okay, so that one, he threw too far over. Mm-hmm. The sideline, there was no way he probably would have caught that inbounds anyway.
No, that was a great catch, though.
Well, it was, but it's not the first time either that we've seen Smith kind of throw it a little high to the sideline.
Yeah. What? Really?
So here's the one that kind of irks me, because people immediately started getting all over the quarterback for not making this throw. It was the one deep to Manningham where he got one hand on the ball and it was incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
So Maiocco and Barrows both made this observation independently of my observation, which I told you at the time when it happened on Twitter. I may have told you on Twitter. I don't remember.
You did.
Maybe I didn't.
You did.
Whatever. Did I?
I wasn't in the mood to hear it, so I don't really know what you said.
No, I know you weren't in the mood to hear it. So here's what Barrows says. Smith goes deep right to Manningham, who puts a double move on Wilson. Wilson grabs at him, slows him down, and the ball glances off Manningham's hand. If Manningham catches the seemingly catchable ball, it's a 51-yard touchdown, yada, yada, yada. So we've seen Manningham, A, make diving catches, okay? We've seen him make some acrobatic, crazy catches before. So he didn't fully lay out. I think what he was trying to do was get up to it and catch it in stride and then run in for the score. That's number one. He didn't lay out for it. You know, whatever, that's fine. He might have caught it, he might not have. The second part is, if you watch the play, when he makes that double move around Wilson, when the ball is in the air, you can see him turn his shoulders to the inside. It looks like he's making that move like, oh, the ball's underthrown, I got to turn inside so I can go get it. Then when he realizes that the ball isn't underthrown, his shoulders immediately go back square down the field, and by that time he's out of position to make the catch. If he had been running full speed, full on, that ball's in stride. And that's a score.
Well,
it's one thing if he had been running all out the whole way,
yeah,
and he only was able to get one hand on it. But he made that little shoulder turn like he thought it was underthrown. And even Matt Maiocco observed the same exact thing.
Oh, he observed the shoulder turn.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure there's something to that. I know you know football very well. I didn't watch that play tonight in my film review, my film session. So I don't know. But
right.
I do know that if Alex had...
Well, and here's two more real quick.
Yeah.
Or one more. One more later in the third quarter, he made a throw to Walker that went for 25 yards. So...
And he had one to Vernon as well. Maybe it wasn't. Oh, you're looking at the third down. No, you're looking at the over 20 yard throws, right? The seven.
Right.
Okay, so the one to Vernon may have been like 18 or something like that. But he had a good chunk to Vernon Davis as well. That was a good pass. We remember a couple of plays. And if Alex was able to connect with Crabtree and Manningham on those two throws, And then we're talking about how amazing he was to have 14 completions for 212 yards and two touchdowns, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So I know we shouldn't overreact about these things. But
well, and really, it's like the other thing is that we all know that he's made adjustments to his mechanics over the offseason.
Yes.
And when you think about it, when you've got these guys that are running this fast, and clearly he can make the deep throws to Vernon. Like, his timing is money with Vernon Davis. No problem. So what is it about throwing to these other guys that's a little different? I think that, you know, it's throwing deep is an inexact science because your perspective, your visual perspective is slightly off. You're not throwing, you're just not throwing directly to a guy. You're throwing out to a spot, trusting the guy to run up underneath it. So it's just a matter of the guy taking a little bit of mustard off his throws. How little, it's hard to say because, again, he was a pretty accurate deep thrower last year. He didn't take a lot of shots, but he was like the fifth rated passer for passes over 20 yards last season. So the good thing is that in the Jets game, at least, you saw them get the matchups that they were looking for. Alex saw it and threw it.
Mm-hmm.
We've had so many times in the past where it's been, oh, he didn't see that guy wide open. He didn't see that guy running downfield. He didn't see the one-on-one matchup. He's seeing it, and he's throwing it, and he's just a little bit off. It's enough that it's a little overthrown or it's a little off target, but it's a little bit, and it's a small change that I think if they work that kink out in practice, you're going to see that him get a lot better at that as the season progresses. And we saw last year, we saw how the offense just progressed from this inept, anemic, plodding thing to an offense that was able to, you know, go toe-to-toe with the New Orleans Saints in the playoffs.
Yeah. There's no question that Alex has really mastered the offense, it seems. I mean, he looks very comfortable out there calling the play. How many times you see him seemingly change the play at the line right now? I mean, right. All the time he's doing it. He sees a matchup he wants, and he changes the play, and he tries to exploit it, and that's awesome for us fans, 49er fans, to see. And the only the two things in his game that need to improve are what we're talking about now, making some of these connections down the field, and just not taking some of the sacks he takes. I don't mind him. If he gets sacked because they blow coverage or they blow pass protection, that's one thing. But he still takes some sacks where he should have thrown the stinking ball away. He had time to do it, and he just doesn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, what it all comes down to, Jim, is there are only two teams in the NFL with worse passing numbers than the 49ers. They're the 30th ranked passing team in the league after four games. And only the Jaguars and the Seahawks are worse. Even the Jets
When you say 30th ranked, what's that mean in total yardage?
Let me see how NFL.com has this lined up.
I mean, because if you're talking total yardage, it's like, you know, so what? They're 3-1.
Yeah.
I don't care how many passing yards you throw for if your passing game is doing its job. Now, it didn't do its job against Minnesota. And against New York, the game plan was run the crap out of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You don't run for 250 yards on accident. You know, and it wasn't like they weren't trying the passing game either. It just, you know, some stuff didn't work. But overall,
well,
it wasn't
terrible.
Well,
that's the thing. It's just you add up a couple of missed passes and it equals 200 yards of offense. A missed pass
and so
every game.
And so that could have been, that could have been, two made deep throws could have been the difference between 30th ranked and, 24th ranked. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're right, because this is ranked by yards, and they have 717 passing yards. But if you go their 30th, if you go up to 20, which is the Cleveland Browns, they're at 941. So you're talking 200 yards between 20 and 30. So that's the thing. It's just like they're so close to having that really complete offense that we saw coming together in the first two games. And if they have that on a consistent basis with that defense and that special teams, they are unstoppable. Then they have a very good chance at a Super Bowl. So,
yeah. Well, and also, you know, how's Cleveland doing this year?
Hey, that did you watch that Thursday good. Night game?
No. Oh.
The Cleveland?
No, I saw like the beat. Oh, I saw like the first quarter.
Okay, that was the first time I watched the Browns. And I got to tell you, Brandon Whedon looked pretty darn good. I know it's only one game.
Yeah, you know what? I don't think he's awful. and then you look at like, you know, Tannehill throwing 400 and something yards on the Cardinals' supposed top 10 defense. and who won that game again? Cardinals did.
Cardinals did.
So, you know, it's, you know, I'm with my guy. And when he says, I don't care how many yards you throw for as long as you win.
Right.
That's what I'm going with. You know, if they didn't have a good defense and they didn't have one of the best running games in the league, then you'd want a guy who can throw for more yards. And I don't think it's impossible to say Alex Smith can't throw for more yards if they schemed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they spread four guys out and you went like he was playing at Utah, you know, he could take advantage of some of those zone, you know, coverage schemes. But more often than not, they're dealing with a, you know, two safety up top man coverage scheme because of the formations they bring out. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not concerned necessarily because A, Alex Smith is really good at home and they've only played one home game. You know, they've got seven other home games to go. That's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, again, he's not been the most consistent on the road. Now, he was more consistent last year, well, but they've only played three road games, and winning at Lambeau is no small feat.
No, no.
So, you know, if they hadn't run the ball 150 times against the Jets, probably would have had more chances there and to complete passes. And give the Jets credit because they played the slants really aggressively. They didn't leave a lot of stuff open over the middle. And, you know, they had a pretty decent defensive game plan. It's just when the Niners decided to run the ball, they just simply out-physicaled them.
So let's talk about...
And then the Jets couldn't make tackles either.
Yeah, they have some issues. There's no question about it. I know they're 2-2, but I think they're going to be 2-4 pretty quickly here.
No, you know what? You know what? The way things have been going in this league this year, I would not be shocked, and I'm telling you this, you know, I picked the Rams to beat the Seahawks last week, you know, before the games were played, knowing that the Seahawks, you know, would come off this win against Green Bay.
Right.
And I'm telling you, the Houston Texans are due. They are due. And
due for a letdown.
I know it's the Jets, but I would not be shocked to see the Jets beat the Texans because just the way everything has been going, it's been like, who's going to beat who any given week? I don't even know anymore.
It is hard to know. And there is kind of a storm there of a very embarrassed Jets team. And let's not forget, they get paid a lot of money too. So they don't want to be embarrassed, you know, and they got embarrassed. So we will know
never
a
know
lot
what
about the Jets based on how they respond to their butt whooping.
Yeah.
But still, even with the butt whooping, let's talk about that final call at the end of the first half, which drove me freaking crazy.
Shall we?
Yes. And the call, you all know what I'm talking about. 20 seconds on the clock, 21-yard line. You have a timeout, first and 10. And they run a play very similar to the play that was run in the fourth quarter of the New Orleans game where Alex ran around into the end zone.
Or very much like the Kaepernick touchdown play earlier.
Yes. So it didn't work out that time. And Alex seemingly, I don't know what he was looking at, but seemingly tripped over Staley. I'm not sure if he got clipped on the ankle, though, from behind, because there was someone who dove at him.
I think his foot got caught on the defender's knee or something. And, you know, like he didn't jump over him. He just sort of kind of strode over him and just the toe caught and he just went down.
But. Yeah. Well, not the most graceful looking thing. But, and then they just let the clock run down and kick a field goal. I was extremely...
Well, now, before you continue.
Yes.
And this won't change your feeling about it, but I think the intent was to get the ball on the left hash for Akers, because the way the game was going, you had a 7-0 lead. Your defense was playing great. The Jets obviously were no threat to do anything. You figure the defense is going to give you the ball back in the second half. So you take the points you get. Now, obviously that doesn't change your idea or your feeling.
Yeah, but doesn't everything you just say justify taking a shot at the end zone too? Because they're not a threat?
But I think the idea was that, well, yes it does, but I think the idea was that get as many yards as you can. They probably figured you'd probably be able to get a first down against this formation. We'll call the timeout. We'll be a little closer, then we take our shot, and then if we don't get it, kick the field goal. At that point, when he gets tackled, it's like, let's just kick the field goal. You know, I don't think they really put a whole lot of thought into it. But your point, I believe, is you got to take a shot right there.
Yeah, that's my point. I mean, you have these weapons. You have Randy Moss. You know, why not throw it high where only Randy can catch it or it goes out of bounds? You know, why not try something? I have to believe they've been practicing some plays within a 20-yard touchdown plays. And here you have a team that, because one thing. You know Alex isn't going to throw an interception. The odds of that happening are so small because he's not going to take that chance. Yeah. And even if he gets sacked, you're close enough that a kicker like Akers is well within his range. So I know he wasn't having his best day. I know, but the fact that he's not having his best day is even more of a reason to take a shot.
Here's the other thing, you know, when you get in close quarters like that and you're throwing the ball, you know, obviously there's a risk to it. There's a risk of the ball getting tipped up and getting picked, or you know, whatever. But you could see as the clock was running out, you know, Alex looked to the sideline. And then as soon as the camera gets on him, he's like, he kind of had that really disgusted look on his face, like, what are we doing? Like, why are we not taking a shot? That's the look on his face. Either it was, man, I'm disappointed that I got tripped up by the guy, but he looked, honestly, frustrated.
Yeah.
And it was
a few times in that game.
Yeah, and this is great to see. You know, it's not like, oh, shucks, we missed it. It's like he looks like he's just getting angry when they're not doing the stuff that they need to be doing. And, you know, especially on that one, I think that he probably felt, I think it was all Harbaugh. You know, I think that Alex felt like they should take a shot. They have a timeout. And let's go for it. And if we don't get it, we still got a few seconds on the clock to kick a field goal. But, you know, why are we going to run this play on first down and then we're just going to let it run out and then kick a field goal? You know, I think he wanted to take a shot. So the thought comes in, oh, well, you're playing not to lose, or you're playing scared. And, you know, like you said to me, if we lose this game by 3, then how are you going to feel? And I'm like, there's fear on the other side, too, because it's like, oh, we could lose this game by 3, so we need to go for a touchdown. But that's also, I think, can be coaching from fear. But the other side of that is score as many points as you can.
Yeah, I don't think it's so much coaching from fear either way in this case, because I don't think Harbaugh is really afraid, but he can be cautious and conservative, being a little old school the way he is. But I just don't think that you should take it for granted that the Jets aren't going to come out and do something unexpected or have a couple of fluke turnovers go their way or a run back, a kickoff, or a touchdown. You just don't know what's going to happen. And you see too many times where teams seemingly play like crap and yet find a way to win at the end. Cardinals. So you should never take points for granted. And
true.
You're right there at the end. You have them on their heels. If you punch that touchdown in, you know you're going to – you don't know, but there's a good chance you're going to break their spirits right then and there. And I just would like to see the Niners take some more shots in a strategic, you know, prudent way, not Tony Romo, Jay Cutler kind of way.
The thought is if you have the time and you have the ability to stop the clock, why not?
Exactly. If the play's not there, throw it away, kick your field goal.
Right.
But at least you took the opportunity.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you, but obviously I wasn't as emotionally tied to the decision as you were.
It turned out okay in the end, but I was pretty ticked off.
If it's like tied, you know, then I might feel a little more, emotional about not going for it, but it was kind of like, whatever. Maybe I'm just mellowing out in my old age. I don't know.
In your old age, yeah.
But I am, man. My beard's getting gray. Okay, so let's close the book on the Jets game. Obviously, it was fun to see. It was interesting watching Atlanta and Carolina. I wasn't really too broken up about not watching the end of a blowout, but, you know, I was still a little annoyed. So this week coming up, the Niners are back at home for a three-game stretch, beginning with Buffalo, then New York Giants, and the Seattle Seahawks. Interesting that they're going to have Buffalo Sunday, the Giants Sunday, and then they play Thursday night –